The following episode of Annals on Call is brought to you by Annals of Internal Medicine. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and participants during this episode are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the American College of Physicians, the editors of Annals of Internal Medicine, or the institutions that the speakers are affiliated with unless so identified. All relevant financial relationships have been mitigated. Information contained herein should never be used as a substitute for clinical judgment. For more episodes, links to CME and MOC, or to view disclosures, visit go.annals.org/oncall.
It helped us just pull us together as a family. It made us much closer because we started to be in the now. And, you know, there's like, what do you hope for? It's like, oh, I didn't think about what I hope for.
Welcome to Annals on Call, a podcast based upon articles from the Annals of Internal Medicine, in which we discuss the implications of the article for you, the listener. This is Dr. Bob Centaur. I'm Professor Emeritus at the University of Alabama at Birmingham and former Chair of the Board of Regents for the American College of Physicians.
This episode of Annals on Call features an article titled, Don't Wait. Palliative care referrals can be life-changing. Joining me is the author, Monica Wright, who has a website, www.monicawrightreflections, all one word, .com. She was the wife of a man who needed palliative care, and she talks about that journey. I think this is very valuable insight for all of us, and I urge you to also read her article in the Annals. Thank you for joining our podcast. Monica, thank you so much for joining the podcast. I read your piece in the Annals of Internal Medicine and read it with a sense of grief, but also an uplifting story of things being finally being done in the right way. So in order to really discuss this, if you could sort of tell us the initial story of Jerry's illnesses and where you were before you found out about palliative care.
First, thank you for inviting me. Really happy to be here. And I also have to say one other comment about what you said. You said you had two different emotions when you read it. And one of the things that I've noticed was being able to hold those kind of conflicting things. Mm-hmm. It was happy and sad at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that's been a journey for me. But to go back to the beginning, I think the best place to start is when I felt that I was on this treadmill and I was just trying to survive and, get through a day, get through work and then come home and take care of Jerry and figure things out. And it was survival mode. It was like, is this what life is going to be? And it was almost like all our world shrank because he kept having more and more problems. So it was like one doctor's appointment. It all revolved around medical care. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was like, this is not life. And for him, it was confusion, like what's happening and why is this happening? And, you know, he was a complicated medical case. He had had, in the 10 years before, he had had diabetes. He had had a triple bypass. He had other coexisting problems that didn't make him easy to diagnose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what diagnosis were they working with as you were dealing with this overwhelming, and I've seen this so many times. Sometimes as a physician, we forget that not only do we have to take care of the patient, but we have to take care of all the support that patient has because of the impact it has on the person who is supporting the patient.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of physicians do that. Maybe you're the exception. I mean, I felt we were out on our own a lot. And we saw different specialists and they're all in their own silos. Mm-hmm. He had had strokes before. They didn't really know. He had just a neurological thing going on. And, he had a seizure. You know, they weren't sure if it was a seizure disorder or if it was, and then he started having mild cognitive delay. So it was a vascular thing. And I'm sorry, I forget the question you asked me now.
No, it was really, did he have a diagnosis or just a series of symptoms?
Okay. Well, he had a lot of different diagnoses. I mean, one doctor thought we saw lots of different neurologists over time. One thought it was a seizure disorder, and another thought it might have been migraines at one point because he kept on having like TIAs, but he would recover. He would go back to baseline. And so it was really an unknown thing. And finally, at one point, I think his symptoms got pronounced enough. Motor symptoms got pronounced enough. You know, he'd had the stooped over posture, things that were more recognizable. And that's when a neurologist said, ah, I think he has Parkinson's. And so that was the initial diagnosis.
And then he just kept going downhill.
Well, see, that was the thing. You know, he, well, and here's for us, we didn't know what Parkinson's was. You know, we just got that diagnosis, and the physician didn't really, or the neurologist didn't really say much. So we were on our own, and that made us dive deep into like Parkinson's Foundation and things like that. We're very helpful, go to conferences and kind of educate ourselves what was happening. And that was very helpful. But then, like you said, it started progressing faster than Parkinson's, and the medication wasn't really helping. And then he started falling and, you know, having those kind of complications. And so I kept going back to the neurologist saying, you know, what this is happening too fast. What's going on? And that's when the neurologist threw out the three Parkinson's plus syndrome names and said, you know, we don't know this. It's a provisional kind of thing. You don't know unless there's an autopsy done. And that's when we had already decided we were giving our bodies up for medical donations, but we also found out about brain donations, and we set that up too because we wanted to know in the end. But I had to switch neurologists at that point because I wanted more. I had to go to, are you familiar with Cure PSP? It's an amazing website that really it settles on the three Parkinson's plus syndromes. It says Cure PSP, but I learned just a lot there, and I got into the support groups. We got in the support groups there, and I went back to the neurologist. I said, you know, I know you can't say. It's like he almost didn't want to be wrong. You know what I mean? And I said, so can you refer me to the specialty clinic up over here at OHSU? They've got an expert kind of thing to do. And I was in Kaiser, so you have to stay in-house. And he goes, but you can have another opinion. And that was good. Went to somebody else that was sort of more aligned in where we were. And she gave us a provisional diagnosis of MSA.
So you're struggling with all this, and then somebody helps you by mentioning palliative care. Tell us about that experience.
Well, that was eye-opening to me because I had never heard of it. And this was in an online support group of people who were either the patient themselves or a spouse. And I was, you know, you trade as people that are impacted, you trade of your struggles. And that's when somebody said, you know, you should really check into palliative care because part of the problem with that I found was he had this complex medical history. And then we'd go to urgent care for this, or we'd go to the ER for that. And we'd go to, you know, all new doctors all the time. And I'd have to try to express this complex thing, and they'd do the best they can. And what happened was we'd end up getting more and more pills for different things. I mean, the medication list just went, you know. And I felt, and then I'd have conflicting advice that, at least in my mind, I didn't understand it. And so and that's when somebody said, yeah, go to palliative care, then you have a dedicated team. And I thought, well, I don't know if it'll be any different, but I don't have anything to lose. And so that's when we got a referral for
Well,
that.
I have a definition that I use when I talk to patients about palliative care, but I want to hear your definition of palliative care and how, in your opinion, physicians should raise that option and explain that option.
Okay. what I found palliative care was, the difference was, it wasn't just centered on Jerry. It took in the whole family. So it was like, not only is it disease impacting him, but it's impacting us together and that kind of thing. And it also, I didn't know what those catchwords meant. I didn't know what quality of life meant, or what are the other ones that they say? Social emotional support. But I found out once they came that, they were able to say, they met us where we were. You know what I mean? We were in different places. Sometimes he was at the point where he was dealing with losing his skills, losing his independence. Coming to terms with that kind of stuff, really hard stuff. And I didn't know how to respond to that, but they did. They were able to say, "Oh, you say it sucks. Why does it suck?" I wouldn't have thought of that. It seems like a really easy question, but I would have gone, "Oh," or, they helped us work through that. Or when he got angry at stuff, they helped him work through that anger, like it was okay to be angry. And then for me, it just helped me watch them facilitate the conversation between us, and it helped us just pull us together as a family. It made us much closer because we started to be in the now. And turn, there's like, what do you hope for? It's like, oh, I didn't think about what I hope for. And so it really went much deeper than just, I mean, the symptom, I met them much more frequently. That's the other thing. So you have the symptoms are always changing. His thing is always progressing. So that was helpful. And I didn't have to explain our story again and again and again. So that kind of thing.
So I'm going to have you react to what I often say to patients and their families. It says, I don't think that we can fix the disease, but we can make every day the best it could possibly be for you and your family. And what palliative care is going to do is they're going to figure out what's bothering you and try to address that, as opposed to just focusing on what the disease is, but focusing on what the patient's needs are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that sounds good to me. That sounds good to me. I think the only thing that I can see differently from my viewpoint, being on the other side now, is that I feel like the referral should be made at the point of diagnosis. Right when you're diagnosing somebody with either cancer or a serious chronic illness, it should just be, and I'd love for you to tell me why that can't happen, because it just makes sense to me. Because
So I'm gonna respond to that. There are studies that say for certain cancers, especially lung cancer, that immediate referral to palliative care extends both quality and quantity of life. Both quality and quantity. Now, there are other cancers in which it may not be quite so. Like, most breast cancer is cured, or cured for a long time. So it depends. So one of the things that we have done a bad job of explaining to non-physicians, non-nurses, etc., is that cancer is a lot of different jobs, a lot of different diseases, that different neurological diseases, some are fixable, some aren't fixable. And so I think we have to, a great example is, we refer a lot of people who have end-stage heart failure, end-stage lung disease, COPD, but we don't start palliative care until they get to a certain point where our medications are no longer likely to help. Otherwise, people would be on palliative care for 25 years. And so we have limited palliative care resources, so we also have to take care that we don't overextend the palliative care doctors.
Okay, that makes sense to me to some degree, because some things are curable. But the thing is, a referral to me helps the family sort out what the heck they want to do, because some people don't want treatment, but we didn't know we had another option.
So your situation is one where early palliative care, I think, would have been very, very appropriate. Once you get to the Parkinsonian plus syndrome, I think it would make sense. So after you had palliative care, and you've already described this, I think what helped you and the family was, You had the right conversations,
Right.
and you had a more clear idea of what was going to happen, how it was going to happen, and how you're going to make that as reasonable and comfortable as feasible in that situation.
Right.
So here's the big question for you. I teach medical students and residents, and I have plenty of friends who are practicing physicians. What do you want them to learn? The people who are listening to this podcast are mostly primary care physicians, hospitalists, residents, medical students. And what do you want them to know from your experience that'll help them do a better job in introducing palliative care and explaining about palliative care?
Okay. In retrospect, looking back, there were several times in interacting with Jerry's doctors that I think I was saying a call for help. And it went on deaf ears. So for example, if I remember asking the neurologist, well, tell me about prognosis. I know everybody's different, but I mean, are we talking here? I was bringing up that I understand we're talking about death at the end. When a patient brings something up like that, they need to start talking to someone in palliative care because they need to work out how that feels and how they're gonna go. So when you hear a kind of a question like that, when they're just breaking down, basically. I mean, when you're like, I can't do this. This is too much pressure or whatever. That means they need help. They need more help than what the regular doctor can do. They need a wraparound thing that deals with the whole family. So I think you can hear it in the patients when they need it, if you listen.
Well, I'm so delighted that you wrote this paper, and as beautiful, and everybody should go read it if they haven't already read it, and read it again, because you put into words something that sometimes we have a hard time understanding in the medical profession. We shouldn't, but sometimes we do. And it's been a delight talking to you about this. And I think hopefully we've raised the awareness of earlier palliative care rather than later palliative care for many physicians. So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Now it's time for Bob's Pearls. I really enjoyed this conversation. Personally, fortunate enough to have been influenced very early in the palliative care movement when we started a palliative care service at our Veterans Hospital, which we call Safe Harbor. I've had a lot of experience talking to palliative care docs and learning how to talk to patients and how to consider when palliative care is the right option. Not everyone is in a clinical situation where they have access to great palliative care. Palliative care doctors can be very special for patients and families, and it's important that we support them, those of us who are not palliative care doctors, by using them in appropriate ways. I think Monica's discussions of how this helped her and her family is poignant and reflects my experience with introducing palliative care to patients. I hope this influences you to look at palliative care in a fresh way. I can't thank Monica enough, and thank you so much for listening to our podcast.
Information contained herein should never be used as a substitute for clinical judgment. For more episodes, links to CME and MOC, or to view disclosures, visit go.annals.org/oncall